All right, the next matter is Welch v. Peery. And I believe we're only hearing from the appellant. Good morning, Mr. Little. Again, this is Welch v. Peery.
May it please the court, my name is Adam Richard Little, the law firm Ballou Hazen, and I'm here today on behalf of the appellant, Preston Peery. The case before the court today is one on removal and whether the court abused its discretion in allowing the mother to remove the minor child to the state of Florida. Before I begin my argument, would the court like a brief recitation of the facts?
I think we're fairly familiar.
Okay. With that, I'll move forward with my argument. My roadmap today, Your Honors, there are four issues that we assigned as error. The first and most important one where I'll be focusing a balance of my argument is that the district court abused its discretion in permitting the removal of the minor child to the state of Florida and that finding the removal was in the child's best interests. The second is that the court abused its discretion in modifying legal custody where neither party requested that and there was no finding of a material change in circumstances. Third, there was a refusal to consider modification of child support, and there was no basis for the court's refusal, particularly where the parties agreed and believed it was in the child's best interests. Finally, there was an abuse of discretion in failing to hold the appellee in contempt, and I will note that I will stand on my argument in the brief on that issue. The standard of review today, Your Honors, is one of an abuse of discretion. In child custody determinations, this court will review the record de novo to determine if the court abuses discretion in reaching its decision. When the court reviews the record in this case, we would urge you to find that the district court did in fact abuse its discretion and reverse and remand this case for further proceedings on the matter of removal, custody, and support. Turning to my first point, the district court abused its discretion in finding that the move of the minor child to the state of Florida was in the child's best interests. As a preliminary note, the standard in this case is a two-pronged test. The first is that there must be a legitimate reason to move the child, and second, the move must be consistent with the child's best interests. Mr. Peery, while he disputes the reasons for her move, will concede that the record does not support an abuse of discretion on the first prong of a legitimate reason. Therefore, the balance of the argument will focus on the second prong of the best interests. There is a three-factor test to determine whether a removal is consistent with the child's best interests. First, that each parent's motives for seeking or opposing the move. Second, the potential the move holds for enhancing the child's quality of life. And finally, the impact that such a move will have on the contact between the child and the non-custodial parent. Turning to the first prong, the district court failed to account for Ms. Welch's bad motives. The ultimate question in evaluating the motives of a party in this standard is whether either party has elected or resisted the removal in an effort to manipulate the other party. Now, Ms. Welch acted in bad faith. The record is replete with examples where she took unilateral action inconsistent with court's orders and in a means to deprive Mr. Peery of his relationship with his child.
Didn't in reality any acts that she took place during a time that he was in prison?
So
the contact was really limited at best to telephone contact anyhow.
We will concede that Mr. Peery was in fact incarcerated during a period of time that this matter was being litigated. However, the incarceration does not deprive him of his constitutional protected relationship with his minor child. That first and foremost. Second, the record also indicates numerous instances where Ms. Welch would interfere or prohibit him from having that parenting time. In fact, she testified in one instance that she didn't have to exercise that telephonic parenting time whatsoever because she believed she was in full control. And this was despite full knowledge that the court's orders were inconsistent with that. She believed that his incarceration gave her a moral superiority to do as she chose, and that action deprived him of his right to have a relationship with his child. Mr. Peery was unable to exercise any visitation for the year 2017. He had furlough days in prison. He worked as hard as he could to find days where he was able to go and spend time with his child, and every single time she denied him. She did not allow him to have any contact with his child. And so the effect on that relationship between the two of them was serious and detrimental. Turning back to the bad faith here, Your Honors, I think it's most telling when we look at what action she took at the beginning of this proceeding. In May of 2017, she went to Florida under the guise of a vacation. That's what she justified to the court of why she was in Florida. However, she quit her job, informing them that she was moving to Florida with her child. She was pregnant at the time and sought out a new OB in Florida. She sought to transfer all of hers and her child's medical records to Florida. And most egregiously, she attempted to enroll the child in school in Florida for the fall of 2017 without permission of the court and without discussing it with Mr. Peary whatsoever. She also disenrolled the child from her existing school, also without discussing with Mr. Peary or permission of the court. Now, why is a discussion with Mr. Peary important? Because at that point in time, the parties had joint legal custody, which obligates her to fully discuss that issue with Mr. Peary in an attempt to reach consensus. She made no effort whatsoever. In fact, she did so in an attempt to try and circumvent Mr. Peary's right to be involved with his child. She specifically instructed the Florida school not to release any information to Mr. Peary whatsoever. This is indicative of her bad faith in attempting to move in a means to try and further isolate Mr. Peary from his child.
So the court heard all of that evidence and yet still found that there was a legitimate reason to leave and that it was in the best interest of the child to go.
Yes, Your Honor. And that's why we're here today, is that we believe that the court abused its discretion in failing to afford proper weight to this evidence. The court simply disregarded it and did not find either party to have a negative motive in this case.
But is the motive the worst factor?
It is not, Your Honor. And that's going to lead me to the next and most important part of this, is that the district court abused its discretion in finding that the child's quality of life would be improved by the move. Now, under Calling v. Calling in the Farnsworth case, there are a number of factors that this court weighs. Now, these factors are not a hierarchy of factors, nor is anyone given any more particular weight in each case. It's a fact-dependent analysis. For the sake of time, I'm going to focus on those factors which we believe the court failed to apply appropriately. First, the emotional, physical, and developmental needs of the child. The court determined that Mr. Peary effectively waived his right to have a relationship with his child due to his incarceration. Now, granted, that incarceration was bad. We're not going to try and pretend that Mr. Peary should not, or was...
Well, this wasn't the first time that he had absented himself by way of incarceration.
It was not, Your Honor. However, Mr. Peary was a model prisoner during this period of time, and he was released early. Mr. Peary has paid the debt for that crime, and it should not deprive him of his right to have a relationship with his child.
But at the time of trial, there really wasn't much evidence put on about what his status was, how long he was going to be incarcerated, and those kinds of things. There really wasn't any evidence presented to the court on that, was there?
There was a brief mention, Your Honor, that of when he would be expected to be released, and it was only a few months following the trial. I apologize, I don't have the exact date in front of me, but I do know that he was released shortly after this proceeding.
He was in community corrections at the time of the trial, is that correct?
Yes.
Which typically means you're close.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. further, the court failed to consider the exposure that Ms. Welch was for the minor child to her abusive boyfriend. there was a 2013 assault of her boyfriend on Ms. Welch that the child had witnessed, and Mr. Patton had also assaulted another individual in 2016. This simply posed a concern as to the environment that she was willing to expose the child to. Turning to the next factor, the quality of the relationship between the child and parent, Ms. Welch acknowledged that Mr. Peary had a good relationship with his child, they love each other, and that he's a fit parent. Prior to his incarceration, he saw the child 4 to 5 times each week. Once he was incarcerated, he would call regularly. When she decided to move to Florida is when she stopped allowing that contact with Mr. Peary. for the sake of time, Your Honors, I'm going to move on to the third and final point here, that the court unjustly implemented an unreasonable visitation schedule that irreparably harms Mr. Peary's ability to maintain a meaningful parent-child relationship. The impact on the non-custodial parent's visitation with the child focuses on the court's ability to fashion a reasonable parenting time schedule that will allow the non-custodial parent to maintain a meaningful parent-child relationship. A reasonable arrangement should provide for satisfactory basis for preserving and fostering the child's relationship with the child or with the parent. The parenting plan that was adopted by this court here, Your Honors, is punitive. It only allows Mr. Peary to see his child 3 times over a 2-year span. He gets 6 weeks in the summer and 1 week every other Christmas. Further, and most importantly, it is punitive in that it puts an entire financial burden on Mr. Peary. He must book his flights 60 days in advance. He must pay 100% of all of the travel costs up front, and he must reimburse Ms. Welch for any airline expenses that she incurs.
But even with the child support that was left in place, I mean, he's only paying $1,800 a year of child support.
Yes.
And he said he had a job. And there was not really any good evidence as to what he's paid in that job that I could see. Mm-hmm. But how is that burdensome to pay for a couple or pay for some plane tickets when the amount he's paying is $1,800, and then there was evidence that he wasn't even paying that in prior years, that they would negotiate and he'd end up making a lump sum payment at the end of the year and she'd call it good. So, I mean, this is a person who's, there's no evidence that he was not able-bodied and capable of work. What, I mean, how is that a burden to him?
Your Honor, I see that I'm out of time. May I take a brief moment to answer your question and conclude my point?
Sure.
Okay. Certainly, we would agree that there was little evidence as to the exact amount that he was earning. We recognize that with his incarceration.
And he offered to pay her $10,000 to stay home, to boot. So where was that coming from?
He was going to do whatever he could to find a way to try and keep his child here. And that, I think, is indicative.
Won't he do the same thing to buy a plane ticket?
I think he would do whatever he could here, Your Honor. The issue here is
certainly
not whether
he has $10,000 that he can raise to buy plane tickets.
I think that he was using that in a colloquial manner, that he was attempting to say, look, I'm willing to do whatever I have to at this point. Now, whether or not he has that available to him does not take away from the fact that the court entered a parenting plan that severely limited his ability. And I would direct the court to the 2000 Supreme Court case, Kalkowski v. Kalkowski. It's very analogous to this case in context of the move that was allowed in that case. And here, there it was from Ogallala to Alberta, a distance of about 1,200 miles. Here, the move to Florida is about 1,450 miles. In Kalkowski, the court specifically acknowledged that the significant expense and time considered for travel must be factored into any parenting plan that's adopted and under analyzing this factor. Our point here to the court is that it imposes significant burdens on him, particularly where she was willing to waive child support as a means to help financially support him. The court ignored that. And that it forces him to pay 60 days in advance, and if he doesn't, he waives his parenting time. That right there is a problem. He should not have to waive his parenting time if he does not have the financial ability at that point in time to be able to see his child. Her bad faith conduct about not allowing him to have that time indicates that this is going to be almost the last shot for him. His relationship's already harmed. It's only going to continue to be harmed unless this court takes action. For these reasons, we are asking the court to reverse and remand today and find that there was an abuse of discretion in permitting the removal to the state of Florida. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. The matter is submitted.